The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Everybody want to know what I would do if I didn't win. I guess we'll never know.
So keep it locked. I don't get enough of it. Jesus just rose again.
Listen to the kids.
Welcome to Watching the Throne. My name is Chris, and today we are joined by Malik. Malik is an artist here in Austin. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody?
Yeah, so I'm Malik, just a local artist and producer, expressing myself through art.
You say local artist and producer, but you've had some wins so far. Which we'll get into, but I didn't know a lot of background. I was just looking like, yeah, any articles on Malik, and it was just like, oh shit, go Malik. So that was cool. But you just dropped Red, which is your first solo record, right?
Yes sir. It's been a journey to get to this point. I originally had put out early versions of this close to 3 years ago, and that's kind of when the ball kind of started rolling. People started to find me and ended up, you know, being flown out to LA for meetings and whatnot. And so I had to put the project on hold, and it's kind of been like a guessing game on when this project will come out, who's going to support, how it's going to be supported. And yeah, we're finally here.
And it's always the interesting thing about being an artist, right? Like, you just want to focus on the art so much, but there's such a game to play in terms of, all right, how do I get into the position where I can just release the art and it works? Or even when I release the art and people are into it, you have to go on all these kind of deviations to just make it back to the point of getting the work out.
Absolutely. It's a process, and you definitely learn what patience is and time more than anything, for sure.
So you said the initial version started working on 3 years ago. How's that?
Yeah.
Does the one that just came out today differ dramatically? Is it very similar?
Oh, it's completely different. Okay. I think at the time, funny enough, I was like, I didn't know how to make angry music. And I think through these last few years, just being put in a lot of unfortunate situations, I guess stopped being afraid of channeling my anger and getting it out in a very straightforward, aggressive way, which is something that Kanye West is amazing at. So I definitely, you know, I'm pulling references from there. I'm like, okay, yeah, like I can do this and still feel like myself, you know?
Right. Like, because that emotion's part of all of us, and it's, even if it's
absolutely
momentary and not like your default, you're not walking around angry all the time.
Right.
So you may not want to convey that in the song all the time. Like, it's still good to be able to draw on that and let it fuel like the lyrics, the production, the approach. I was listening to the song, and it had me thinking, I don't know if you caught the tweet. It was making me think of Kid Cudi and Travis Scott, kind of, if they came together into just one artist, what would it sound like? And that's the vibe I was getting from
that's Red. A huge compliment right there. I'm a big fan of both of them, man. I was just listening to Man of the Moon the other day. Still, like, you know, there's nothing touches that. Like, I don't know if there's another person even in that realm as far as what he was doing.
It still feels like very fresh, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Like, nothing on that album is trendy, man, like, at all. And yeah, timeless, timeless music for sure.
I still get like randomly Intergalactic stuck in my head.
Yo, that song is, yeah, yeah, incredible.
Yeah, but
incredibly catchy.
Heart of a Lion was always my jam on that album. I was just like, yes, yes.
No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Yeah, you were saying channeling some Kanye there for inspiration. What are some of the artists that you've kind of looked to or been looking to between that period of first creating Red and then getting back to it? And
yeah, so for me, it's been Kanye, Tyler, the Creator, Childish Gambino, Frank Ocean have been like the main four artists that I like really, really connected to. Mm. As far as like bringing in alternative Black perspectives, but it not being so like singular where, you know, other people can't really relate to it or like, you know, understand what I'm talking about or, you know, be able to like live with my art.
Yeah.
Those four for sure are like the main four. And then of course, like, you know, you get bits and pieces here and there, you know, you get Travis Scott, Toro y Moi. Yeah, I could, you know, I could keep going, Tame Impala, but, yeah, man.
Yeah. That's, interesting that a lot of the artists that you named are some of the ones that really have that back and forth duality of like singing, rapping, or just that nebulous area of those things.
Yeah. 'Cause
on Red, you kind of had that switch back and forth between having that flow, but also feeling like at any moment you could go into just song with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, melody is what moves people. And I think just learning more about my voice through the years, I realized that's what people like about me and my voice and what I can do. So kind of embracing that and learning, all right, cool. I don't need to like sit here and try to, you know, sing like a Frank Ocean every song, but maybe if I can bring in little elements, of melody that kind of get stuck in people's heads, I think I can accomplish my goal.
Do you remember when that kind of became a bigger thought for you? Was there kind of one performance or one moment where you're like, oh, my voice, like not just the lyrics, not just like everything else, but.
I want to say actually the beginning of Spectrum, when I first started working on it a couple years ago, the whole purpose of it was for me to explore different genres and explore different sounds that I had never really like dove into before. Mm-hmm. Because I think I was kind of really, really black and white, where either I'm like rapping very, very bluntly or I'm singing very, very like airy. And studying someone like Drake, who kind of toes that line where there's melody, but it's still kind of rough and it's still, it sounds like he's rapping, but you can't really define it. And then of course, like where a lot of rap is today, it is very much, you know, that like hybrid of melody and rap.
Yeah.
I think that's what kind of got my foot into it. And then of course, like, everything that Kanye's done, you know, 808s and Heartbreak being a very, you know, clear, clear reference point. Yeah, I think that's what kind of gave me the confidence. And then, another really, really big moment was when Awaken My Love came out, and
yeah,
hearing Childish Gambino take a complete hard right turn and do it so incredibly. Like, it didn't sound like, oh, you know, this is his first attempt at doing like some soul funk. It was like, you know, if that was your introduction to him, oh yeah, that's just what he does and that's who he is. But that was incredibly, incredibly inspiring for sure.
You talking about Gambino earlier and starting to say, you know, you had that black and white mode of rap or song. Gambino was one of the people I started thinking about because I feel like he was somebody that also hadn't found the mesh of it or the dovetail of it yet. Listening back to like Camp, like he had moments where he was trying, but it was very like off and on, but then getting into his next albums, you can just see him mastering that ability of switching between those things, melding them together, and just how well that's gone for him.
No, absolutely, man. He's Yeah, a big, big inspiration. Just like, and even outside of just music, him being able to do everything, you know, like that's what I want to do. I don't want to just do music. I don't want to just do, you know, clothes. Like, I want to do everything I want to do. I want to write. And I'm just not being able to take the steps to do that. But he's another one of those where it's like, yo, if you have an idea or you have a passion for something, you can do it and you can do it well. And it can be, you know, accepted by the people you want to reach.
Absolutely. And you did the production on Red as well, right? Like you're the ringleader of everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So for this project, I wanted to do everything. So I produced it, engineered it, mixed it, mastered it. So yeah, every bit that you hear is coming from me. And then the goal is like to show people what I can do as a pure nucleus. And then as I expand and grow, I can bring in more people to like take over different parts and, you know, additional producers and features and other people coming in to do mixing and mastering. But yeah, maybe it's a pride thing. Maybe it's, you know, I just want to show people what I can do. I was like, yo, this first one has to just be me, so people can't say anything to me. And then, just grow from there. Yeah.
I mean, you've probably, I'm sure, been online seeing all the conversations of people and the pros and cons they list for all of your favorite artists and just the things that they try to attack people with. And you're just like, yeah, I'm not going to let anybody try to attack me with, like, I can't produce, I can't mix mass. Like, this is me.
Right, right.
Like, showing off, but so that you know I can.
Absolutely. But I think it can very, very quickly become like a problem when now you're too afraid to step out and work with other people, you know, because of whatever like rules you set up in your mind. Or, and that was actually something that No ID helped me a lot through, as far as learning how to collaborate, because we had a conversation about when him and Kanye, they were all starting to work on 808s and Heartbreak, and how that's the moment he really mastered he mastered collaboration and bringing in all these different people in the same room and like knocking out beats like quick and incredible stuff, bro, which led into Twisted Fantasy. It seemed like 808s was kind of that testing ground as far as learning how to pull in the right people to create a sound. And then Twisted Fantasy was like, okay, now we have this process, we're turning it to 100. And I mean, we see what that is. So like when I look at my growth and I look at my favorite artists and albums that are seen as top of the totem pole, like Twisted Fantasy is like undisputably top five rap album of all time. Like you can't tell me otherwise. So if I'm going to do something up to that level, I need to study those processes. Yeah. And it's going to take more than just my mind and to do something like that, you know? Like there's so many people on that project that do things that Kanye can't do by himself, you know? As great as Kanye is, and we want him to you know, do the soul beats by himself and, you know, that whole thing. A lot of the music that we champion Kanye for wouldn't have happened without other people in the room, you know, contributing.
It's a huge part of everything. Like, I think back to when people will be like, oh, Kanye has help from people. It's just like, yeah, Hemingway's big editor for most of his novels and things, that guy was writing paragraphs for Hemingway. And like, there's words in Hemingway's book that are his editor. There are words in like my recent novel that I didn't write that my editor wrote. Like, I've written words in other people's books that come off as it was them that wrote it. Like, it's just a standard practice. I feel like when you get to a certain level that it's just not all on you, and
you need to,
when you're able to still have the vision, but embrace the ideas that everybody else can bring to the table.
Yep.
You can.
Yep. And see that right there. That's the thing. Like, the vision is it, like, and then you're able to pull in the right people. Like I've taken a small step into, like fashion a bit and just learning about that infrastructure. It's very much like all right, I have a vision for what this line's going to be or what this collection's going to be. And then you have countless people pulling references and doing cuts for you and like that aren't just me doing it by myself or one person doing it by themselves, because it's never like you're never going to be able to do what you want to do on at a certain scale if it's just you in a room and a sewing machine, you know. Like that's literally everything, and that's like another big thing I learned from No ID is like not being afraid of references, because everything is reference based whether you're aware of it or not. So the goal isn't to run from pulling references from people or being inspired by other people. It's just widening that like that reference base to a point where you can't tell or not pulling just from one source, because that's when you kind of you get the carbon copy, and that's what that's what people are really afraid of is, oh, you're just a knockoff of such and such, you know. But if you can pull a little bit from here, a little bit from there, it becomes completely new. And I feel like with Spectrum, I'm on that road, you know. Like I think even with the first song, like you can definitely tell where I'm pulling references from, but it isn't just from one thing. And then of course as people hear, you know, the other songs, I'm like, okay, it's not just this one thing. But the goal is to get to a point. I was actually thinking of it like screen resolution. And when you only have a few pixels, you know, you can see, oh, yeah, that's a blue pixel, that's a red pixel, you know. But then once you start pulling in so many references, or that resolution goes up, it becomes a clear image that is completely unique, and you don't see the pixels anymore. And that's what I want for my music, and that's what I'm on that, you know, right, on the road to doing.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah, that ability to synthesize, like draw from different sources, synthesize them all together, and that's what gives you your new flavor, your new energy, and makes you unique. Like there's a book by Robert Greene called Mastery, the guy that wrote like 33 Strategies for War and 48 Laws of Power, and he talks about that for every like expert master that he studied, there was always a period where they picked one thing, they looked into something else, and then they ended up synthesizing like 2 to 3 things together.
Yeah.
And that's what made them stand out. But it wasn't just purely like Da Vinci's just purely an artist. It's like he started as an artist, then went into this, went into this, and then we got Da Vinci. And
absolutely
just on and on, from like tennis greats to, there was a girl that's a scientist that's like the leading expert in robotic hands. And she was a tennis pro for a long time. And it was just something with like the rackets and using the racket and having an understanding of grip that led her to fuse her interest in robotics with this understanding of the human hand. And
that's incredible.
Yeah.
No, that's it right there, yo. Like when people are able to make those connections that like you wouldn't naturally, you know, throw together. That's beautiful.
Not at all. And yeah, well, so No ID, that's not something that a lot of people, like stories of No ID and mentorship from No ID is not a thing a lot of people can throw around. How did that connect come up?
Man, okay. So back when I was first putting out Spectrum, you know, I'm at home, independent, no one knows who I am. I'm putting stuff up and I'm sending crazy amounts of emails to blogs and stuff, you know, just doing what you can do to get your name out there. And this company, the people who manage Jid and Earth Gang, who are both signed to Dreamville, they had found some of my work and they liked it. So I can't remember if I reached out or they followed me on Twitter or something like that. But anyway, we started talking and they're like, hey, we're working on these projects. Would love for you to come out and meet everybody and work and you see, you know, see what happens.
Nice.
So They fly me out to LA. You know, I meet everybody. That's why I met J. Cole for the first time, which was like really, really nuts. That was like, honestly, the craziest period, because they had rented a house. And they just had everyone come through the house. So, like, countless artists and producers. And this is, like, me not ever, like, I haven't met anybody. So I'm very quickly having to get over, like, the shock value of meeting people that I've been, you know, huge, you know, fans of for you know, for such a long time. But, so, yeah, that's first, you know, I was working with Jid and Earth Gang. And so I'm working on Jid's project. And he had a studio session with No ID. So, you know, I'm there with them, and there was a break in the session, and they were like, "Hey, Malik, why don't you play No ID some music just so you can kind of hear what you're doing?" I play Orange, which is the next song coming out. And No ID's going like, "Yo, this is really dope. Like, what's your situation? We should figure something out." And I'm like, "Yo, hey, I'm here. Like, whatever we got to do, you know?" But even then, I was kind of like, let me not put everything into this. I know, like, that's freaking No ID. I'm sure he's busy. He could want to do something. It could not work out. You know, a million things could kind of happen to keep that from playing out the way I would want it to. So I'm just taking it as No ID likes my music. Dope. A few months later, I get invited to the Dreamville sessions in Atlanta. Which was another crazy thing. It was just like, oh my gosh, like, this is insane. I get out there and, like, just crowds of people, crowds of really dope, talented people, but crowds of people. And, like, I don't know how this happened. It could have, you know, it could have been God just setting up this moment for me. But if you were there, you would know no studio was ever empty, ever, like, at all times. I walk into a studio and No ID is just sitting there working on a beat. No one else is in the room. And I'm like, "Oh, what's up, No ID? How you doing?" "Yo, man, I'm good. You want to help me with these beats?" "Hell yeah, I want to help you with these beats." So he's sending me stuff. He's, you know, either chopping up samples or drums, and I'm finishing them. And slowly people start trickling in. Jid comes in. Swiss Beats walks in. He's like, "Yo, this beat is dope." He hops in the booth, puts some vocals on it. I'm like, "Yo." So there's like a photo of me working on this beat. It's No ID and Swiss Beats, like, watching me work on the beat. And in my mind, I'm like, this is the craziest moment. Like, like, rap legends right now are just chilling, listening to me work on this beat. And that was the moment No ID was like, knew, okay, we're supposed to work. So right after the Dreamville sessions had ended, he flew me back out to LA, and we started working. I stayed there for like 2 or 3 months, just being like mentored by him. He's just helping me, you know, paperwork. He's just, "Yo, man, I mess what you're doing. I mess with you as a person. Let me know what you're trying to do. I want to help." So every day he's either giving me stories about Kanye, because I'm a big Kanye fan. He's giving me tips on production. He's like, life, like for real, like, you know, No ID, my mentor, the story, but like, for real, like, he's that guy, you know, like, he's that guy. And it was like, it was wild. Like, and I knew that was like my music home. Like, that was the most comfortable I had ever felt. Outside of leaving my bedroom to do music, it was like, okay, like, this is the next step for me. During that period, he's just introducing me to just mad people. I remember one day I'm in the studio working on a beat, and he's like, "Hey, like, have you met Sean?" And I'm like, "No, who's Sean?" And then Big Sean walks in, and I'm just like, "Oh my gosh. Yo, I'm a huge fan of your work, man. You want to hear some music?" You know, you just, you know, cool as whatever.
Yeah.
But just like tons of moments like that, that were just, yeah, incredible, man.
Yeah,
incredible.
It's terrific to be able to have a mentor like that, because it can make such a difference in terms of, like the speed you're able to travel, like rather than driving at 10 miles an hour, being able to go 35, like in the carpool lane, like avoiding some traffic jams, and just the, it's priceless having that.
No, absolutely.
That's so cool.
And I think even beyond that, to like see someone in a place where I want to be at that age, you know, especially within the music industry, you know, like he's very much still like at peace and happy and successful. And I think I hadn't physically seen someone like that at that age, especially like, especially in rap, like we're just now getting to the point where we have certain, you know, a few veterans and some people don't look as great as we'd wish they would, or, you know, but he's one of those few people who have like aged incredibly well and is open to sharing that knowledge on how he ages, you know, and how he, you know, maneuvers through the industry, how he takes steps out, how, when he steps back in. And yeah, it's truly incredible.
It seems like a big key to know too, like just that right there, being able to step away and not feel like you have to be like going, that there's something like important and something beneficial to just being able to like take a breath.
Yeah, nah, it's everything. It's literally everything.
What stood out to you the most when you were in those studios with people that were at the level that you wanted to be, I guess, like working with those professionals? Because you had been doing it locally in your room, I'm sure, with like some artists in the Austin area. When you get into that scene, was there anything about their process, demeanor, the, I guess just the event that itself, where you're like, oh, this is how it is?
It was, oh, these are just regular people.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm trying to think, honestly, I don't think I met anyone that you would kind of, I don't know, stereotypical, like, oh, he thinks he's, or he got a little bit of fame and he's whatever. Like, honestly, everyone that I met was like really, really genuine, really, really good people. You know, of course, everyone has their things, but it was just really like, okay, like, they're just regular people.
Yeah.
And I just admired the talent and work ethic and like the knowledge that a lot of these people had. And I would like, I was really just excited to be able to be there and see the way things work, you know, because I feel like that's the gap between being a independent artist and being like a major label successful act. Is like, yo, what is their process? How do they like, you know, outside of, okay, I make good music, but what, like, how do I reach people? Who do I talk to? Who like, do I need to get my music in the hands of? And yeah, that knowledge right there is priceless, you know?
Right. Because that is always such a big hurdle, is like, how do I go from this spot here to this next spot there? Like, who do I need to involve? Because as you said, like, you were just like shotgunning out as far as you can to like, can I send it to this person? Can I send it to this person? Will this work? Will this work? And just knowing through that experience that it's just, oh, this person. Like, I just have to go down this path rather than trying to walk all these different paths.
Yeah, no, for real. And I think with no ID, the thing about him is he helps you become more of who you are and doesn't try to shift you and be like, oh no, you should only be doing like really underground stuff, or you should be doing really pop stuff. It's like, no, what do you want to do? Okay, cool. This is what I've seen, and this is how you're successful at that, you know?
Yeah.
And he's helped me, like, whenever he sees me falling for certain things that may pull me off of like where I want to go, he's like, hey, I've seen this before. You might not want to go too far in that direction, you know?
Right.
One of the big things we had a conversation about that really helped me as far as that balance. And it's balance between art, pop, and culture. And every artist that has had the biggest impact has a great balance of those three things.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
Where art, of course, is what we just connect to emotionally, the things that we look at as progressive, pop just being understandable, consumable, and just can just reach people, and culture the message that you're like, who are you speaking to, why are you speaking to them, and what purpose does it have in people's lives? And if you can touch those three things in a song, in an album, in your marketing, in conversation, interviews, like, you're going to make an impact.
Period. Absolutely. Yeah, because you have a message that people can connect to and done in a way that people want to hear. It makes me think about, I'm always really interested in the like evolution of Kanye and Kendrick in both of their discographies, because it seems like both started like in a very pop place. Of course, they had art and they had culture in there as well, but both Good Kid, Mad City, I know Section 80, but Good Kid, Mad City and like College Dropout had really like accessible inroads to the message and what was being said. And then they just keep getting like heavier and like weirder with each album, like stepping more towards art with each one, to where like you have Kanye kind of crescendoing with My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and then going full into Yeezus. And then Kendrick with To Pimp a Butterfly, which is such a great example of those three things coming together. But then going into Damn, where he gets way more like highbrow artistic and loses some of the pop aspects in like song structures and stuff, to where people are like, what is this?
I think one thing I've noticed is once you have people's attention, the pop side is a bit easier to achieve, because you know people are already there waiting to consume. But I mean, as far as Damn though, I might have to disagree with you as far as it losing some of the pop. I think he did it so well that you didn't realize, because when Humble came out, I was like, yo, like, okay, he's on some like more current sounding rap, you know, especially coming off after Butterfly, you know, that was very, very like jazz, soul, alternative to what was going on. And then it almost felt like Kendrick was like, yo, okay, like I can do that, but also don't mess with me, because I can mess up y'all's careers also. But then he did balance it with a lot of other stuff, and like you were saying, song structure, you know, unconventional song structure, and you know, Kendrick is always going to be Kendrick, so it's going to have that, you know, that unique aspect to it. But I think that as far as balance might be his best balance of art, pop, and culture.
Ends up being my favorite, I think, for that reason. Like, as much as I love Good Kid, Mad City and To Pimp a Butterfly, but there's just something with like Damn going that next level. I guess when I think about it as losing some of the pop, it's in kind of the messaging. Like, the messaging in Good Kid, Mad City and To Pimp a Butterfly ends up being a bit more accessible, where Damn, there's some people that listen to it and are like, oh, it's just like, there's not the same degree of concept as in the others. And it's like, oh no, there is. It's just done in a way, or approached in a way, that's less accessible in that style, which has turned some people off to it, even though there's so much going on.
A lot there, man. There's so much there. Like, listening to podcasts like Dissect, you're like, oh man, okay. Like, that went completely over my head. Like, I completely missed that. But I think listening to podcasts like that, and you also, like, help me in my creation. Because once I know how people are listening, and especially people who listen to music that I like and care about music the way I do, I know how to make music that will appeal to them, you know?
Yeah, hit those buttons, strike those chords.
Absolutely. And, like, one big thing for me is the way y'all relate film to albums, and like the structure has been really, really cool, and helps me, like, okay, I know how I want to, it gives me like a structure, or at least options on how I can possibly structure songs and albums and how they can cross-reference each other and relate. Because that's what I love. I love you get to the end of the album and it's like, oh man, there's a callback to the first song that was unanswered, and now he's finally giving me the answers to this. Like, I don't know, that stuff is super, super dope and powerful.
Yeah. Like, just thinking about, like, as you mentioned that, thinking about the albums that I love that do that, like, just started getting goosebumps just thinking about those moments where you're just like, Oh, that hits. Specifically, I've had Ye on my mind a lot just because it was the 2-year anniversary. And thinking about how Nikki's voicemail at the end of Ye ends up being a callback to her intro on My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. And it's like, there she introduces the fantasy. And then at the end of Ye, it's like, reality's upon us. And Nikki's just leaving this voicemail. And it's like, you get these bookends that's very casual. But if you're listening to it in that way, it's just such a punch and such a... It ends that saga in a way that allows you to have some closure.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, when I look at Kanye's discography and, like, the story it tells from College Dropout to Jesus Is King, it's like, yo, like, I haven't read a book that has of, like, a story arc. Yeah. You know, like, it's truly incredible. And the fact that he's so aware of, okay, this album meant this to people. This is how I reply to that album with this next one, you know? And that context is so important. But even if you don't have the context, it's still dope. And, you know?
Yeah, it stands on its own by itself, or it when you're starting to dive into it in that way. And, you know, I think we've had some, maybe not criticism, but I've had conversations on Twitter where people are like, how could you say that Kanye's discography has this continuity to it? And it's like, it's not necessarily that Kanye was like, I'm going to have all my albums flow together and tell one large mega story, so much as that each album captures that period in his life. And just because his life is linear and chronological, it gives those albums this kind of fictional story structure, or this kind of structure that makes them feel like a book, like a movie, in a way that's really cool. And that's just something to learn, like, as a creative. Like, if I'm telling my story in this period of my life, then there starts to be this extra power in a way that maybe some other artists don't do, because they're not telling that period of their life. They're just kind of capturing the next sound.
Like, ideas or emotions or what. Yeah, no, 100%. As long as you're telling your story, as long as your story continues to grow and move forward in a positive or negative way, it's going to relate to what you said before, you know, whether you stayed the same or you grew, or you, man, now you're in a dark place and I'm dealing with this now. It really gives people a journey to follow and be affected by, which is, super, super dope.
What, did you have, not that you have to, if you don't want to, you don't have to, but did you have a favorite story that you've heard about Kanye from No ID that you feel okay telling?
Favorite story about Kanye? Man, I don't know if I have a favorite story that is not out there in some form or fashion that I could tell you if you haven't heard. But I will say, I guess, as far as him mastering the art of collaboration in that period, was like, hearing No ID talk about that was like really, really incredible. And No ID told me about this moment, how after one of the studio sessions, like, him and Kanye were talking, and No ID's like, you know, we just did, right? Like, you know, we just did. Yeah, he's just like, yeah, I do. And then you get 808s and Twisted Fantasy. But,
it's awesome.
No ID one day was playing me a bunch of unreleased stuff from 808s and Twisted Fantasy in that era. And like, to hear some of the stuff that did not make it was like, yo, like, this is incredible. Like, this is really, really crazy. Like, and I see why it didn't make it. Maybe it didn't quite fit sonically, or there's already another song doing the same thing in a different way, but dude, stuff was wild. And even hearing like alternate takes, like he played an alternate take of Heartless, I think it was, and just hearing different melodies he was playing around with was just like, this is inspiring, you know? And to even be in that position to be able to hear that stuff, like, this is, I know so many people want to hear this right now, and I'm the one right here, like, able to take this stuff in, and No ID breaking down, oh, so this is how we, you know, this is how we came to this idea, and this is how it grew and evolved, and this actually started here, and then we had such and such come in and replay the keys, and yeah, it's just, that's how I want to work. You know, I want to work with everyone that I'm inspired by, the best people on earth, to make the best art as possible.
Hell yeah. Man, that makes me think of, I've recently like been trying to draw more. Like, it's always something I've wanted to be good at and was never good at, but did this whole like Udemy online course where I'm watching like 50 hours of videos and now I'm drawing more things. But one of the things that always jumped out to me was how much you see artists like draw something, erase it, draw something, erase it, and just how messy it can be getting it to that place. Yeah. And watching that made me realize in my own like fiction writing, like looking back at my novel, there's just chapters where I write the full chapter, tear it back down to sentences, like three sentences when it was 4,000 words, and then build it back up again and doing that thing there. But then thinking about how you're describing it with music, it's, you do something similar. You draw it out, you erase, you bring things in, you flesh it out, and just over that process start to make it what it ends up being, and how constructive it is.
Absolutely, man. I think, another cool little moment that, once again, more gems from No ID. So when we first met, I was really in this place where I wanted to be, and obviously I still do, critically acclaimed and respected as like a very, very, artistic artist, you know, just like, oh my goodness, I've never heard stuff like this. This is insane. And so a lot of my stuff was that. And I realized, like, over time, I'll play stuff for people and they're like, yo, that's really crazy. I don't know how you rapped on that beat. Like, I never heard stuff like that. But then also people weren't understanding what I was saying or the point of the musical, because it was so, I'm going to throw 87 sounds in this and it's going to have 8 switch ups and just to show you what I can do. And then I was... And then me and Nardi kind of had the conversation about, all right, like, what do you want to do? Like, what's your goal? I'm like, yeah, I want to be one of the biggest artists on the planet, and one of the most creative. And it's like, well, I mentor Kanye, so I'm pretty sure I might have some knowledge that can help you. And he's like, you need to learn how to do pop music. Yeah. And the crazy, crazy thing is, at that point, I had already produced 2 songs for Ariana Grande. So it's like, okay, I obviously have the skills and the talent to do that. But the thing that was getting in the way of me doing it personally in my music was like this weird artistic, like, highbrowness.
Yeah.
You know, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But when that starts taking away from what you actually want to do, that's, you know, that's an issue. So we were having a conversation. I almost said the rapper's name, but I'm not gonna say it because No ID was making fun of him. But there's this rapper that I freaking love that I grew up listening to, who makes, you know, very, very simple, catchy music. And he's like, yo, Malik, how would you like that when you make stuff like this? And I'm like, what you mean? Like, I love it. I don't know why you're sitting here making fun of this music. Like, this is really fire. This is dope. And he's like, well, you should be making stuff like that then. And I'm just like, well, it's not really me, you know, I'm trying to do this. And he's like, if you like it, it is a part of you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh, I never, like, and it's like little simple things like that. I'm like, oh, shoot, I've been kind of like a hypocrite. Like, I'm liking something, but not accepting it, you know, in a certain way. And that's when I learned, okay, every verse doesn't need to be me attempting to be super lyrical miracle all the time, or let me say something that you probably won't understand. It's like, yo, there's so much power in just being direct. Hey, I'm really mad right now. Oh shoot, he's mad, I'm mad too. We're on the same page. There's nothing else that needs to be said, you know. And then it also allows for those moments where you do choose to be really abstract and really, really left. Those moments hold way more weight because it's sitting right next to the super blunt simple stuff too. Yeah. And my favorite artists do both. They do all those things. They don't just do this one thing, you know. At least the artists that I aspire to be like.
Absolutely. They have this
spectrum, no pun intended, of art and skills underneath their belt. So, yeah, once me and No ID had that conversation, it kind of unlocked the things that I learned by working with Ariana to be able to use it in my own music, in my own work.
Yeah, like even looking at Kanye, you look at 808s and Heartbreak, like there's something right there in the title with the word heartbreak that sets up what's going to happen, what you're going to be listening to. The production reinforces it. So you can get something that's like poetic and artsy, like Say You Will, followed straight up by Welcome to Heartbreak. And like Welcome to Heartbreak is way more direct in ways, but the way in which you can stack direct statements to have them build on each other, contrast each other, even though you're being direct rather than artsy, there starts to become depth through juxtaposition and contrast and the buildup.
Yep.
And like when you start looking at those like global or macro aspects of the art and what that's saying, it allows you a lot more freedom in the micro moments. Like people talk about Jesus is King not being as lyrical as other Kanye projects before, but he has so many references and allusions in there, like from the samples to just like individual lines to even like Follow God, jumping on Beanie Siegel's, oh God, why am I blanking on what it is? Where Siegel goes to jail. He keeps quoting it. What's my life like? He interpolates that throughout the entire song, and that just, even if the song's not as like lyrical as All Falls Down or Saint Pablo, because of that, those added layers, it starts to take on so much more meaning. So
I think the issue is when people think lyrical, they're thinking of traditional lyricism, as far as you're probably saying a lot of words and it's very, very like right there for you. And I think Jesus King is lyrical in the way he uses metaphor and deep in that way, and like you're saying, reference. And then on top of that, on a side note, for someone who is just now rededicating their life to Jesus, I've heard people kind of talk about, oh, this, he's not being deep enough about his faith, or it's, he's not like, I don't know, being
like praise,
I can't find
heavy?
The word. No, not even that, but I'm a Christian myself, but I guess people were upset that he wasn't really, really like dissecting a lot of what the Christian faith is and giving you really, really deep Christian references. And I'm just like, no, this kind of is exactly what it's like when you first become a Christian, whether you're rededicating. It's very much, you're just emotional and on fire. And that's what that project is. It's rough around the edges. It's blunt. Maybe you don't like the mixing. Maybe it's not lyrical in the way that you have expected, or that he's even done before. But I don't know. It was funny. When I first listened to it, I was kind of in that realm too of like, sounds a little bit rough. Sounds a little bit maybe unstructured. And over time, I'm like, but I actually just really like the music. I really love the songs. And then a couple weeks ago, I was just in a really, really emotional place. And I just put on the album. And like the first song, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, I get it. Like, it just clicked in a way that hadn't clicked before. And even before that, I already liked the project. But sometimes you just gotta, you have to be in the right place to accept, you know, art. And do I think it's like top three Kanye albums? Probably not, but I like it and I enjoy the music, and that's all that really, you know, all really matters.
Right. Do you have your top three Kanye albums?
Top three Kanye albums. Off the top, I'm gonna have to say, I mean, Twisted Fantasy's got to be there, because, I mean, you know, Twisted Fantasy.
It's Twisted Fantasy,
I'm gonna say 808, because I think out of every album that he's done, that's been the most, like influential, and him literally creating a new sound, like from scratch. You know, but that third spot, man, I found myself going back to Graduation a lot lately. Nice. So I think I'm gonna say those three, but then, man, honestly, like Life of Pablo has grown on me a ton. Like just the way those songs are structured.
It's a weird
there's one. That whole era. Yeah, it's so weird. It's honestly it rotates, man. Like at one point any of them could enter top three. But I think right now those are probably the three that I'm listening to the most. Yeah.
Nice. We went out to LA and got to interview Mike Dean, and there was this crazy moment where he's like talking to us and he's like, "Oh yeah, graduation," and he gets up and goes over to keyboard and he's like, "This is what we use for like Stronger," and just starts playing Stronger.
Crazy. Like,
what the hell is happening? you talked about working on Ariana Grande, like the two songs for her. Was there a difference in that experience of being in the studio there versus previous studio experiences in like the Dreamville stuff, No ID, or was it very similar?
Very different. So with the Ariana stuff, like I wasn't even really in the studio working with her like closely. The first one I did, Better Off, she was at the house we were working out of, but she was upstairs like recording. And they just brought me down a cappella and were like, "Hey, you want to try something? Let's see what you can do." A cappella, and I came up with something 30 minutes to an hour and took it back upstairs, comes back, "Hey, she likes it. It's on the album." What? So, and then the second one, I was actually just here, and Tommy Brown is the guy who produces for Ariana, kind of led me into his world. I'm super grateful for that. He just asked me to send him some beats for the new album. So I was actually working on a bunch of stuff to send to Beyonce. And then I think the Carters had come out and it didn't make it. So I was like, "All right, I got these beats." And then, yeah, Makeup was one of the ones I sent.
That's awesome. And
knocked it out. Yeah.
When you got the Grammy, like your name had been submitted with everybody for the Grammy stuff. What kind of feeling did you experience there?
Man, I can't believe what's happening right now. Like that was like my first placement ever, like producing for anybody outside of like me and maybe some close friends, you know? Like that was, you know, I kind of had this idea of like, all right, I'm gonna get in the industry, I'm gonna have to probably work with a ton of people. I may not be the biggest fans of their music, but it's gonna help me get where I wanna go. Or, you know, it's going to be smaller level stuff, whatever. Like, I kind of just accepted that's what it's going to be, you know? And then for my first placement to be Ariana Grande, it's like, okay, there's a special path being paved right now, and I can't run from this, you know?
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, God is doing something in my life right now, for sure. There's like... For one, how many artists can say, or producers can say that they produce for Ariana? And how many can say, my first ever like production placement was on a number one album, nominated for a Grammy, won the Grammy, like you know? That's really, really crazy. And I don't take any of that for granted because I know how special and like that is and how hard I worked to get to that point, you know?
When they came down and started asking about the acapella, in that moment where they leave and you're left to do the work, where did you think to draw from in that moment? What started you on the path to like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to shape. Like, did it feel a little overwhelming at all? Or did you just feel like ready and draw upon the muse?
So this is what happened. Acapella, gave me acapella, and there was some chords. So the main chords that are in the song were there already. So I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, okay, I've made a million beats before. I'm gonna make another beat right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, they go back upstairs to probably work on another song or something. And then, yeah, so I'm working on the drums, working on the bass, and maybe 30 minutes go by, and I'm like, this is trash. This is not good. Like, this is really not good. And then for like 30 seconds, I'm panicking. I'm like, yo, this is my freaking moment right now, and I'm missing it. I'm ruining it. I'm not, like, I'm never gonna get this chance again. And I'm like, ah, chill, chill. Like, this happens every time you make a beat. You write a line, that was the corniest line I've ever said. Oh, I'm terrible. Oh, actually, I needed to write that because I need to get to this one word that builds the next thing, you know? So yeah, I kind of had to snap myself out of it, kept working on it. Tommy Brown came downstairs, heard the idea. Oh, yo, this is dope. And then he helped me kind of structure, like, oh, you should remove this because that's making it too busy. Cleaned it up a little bit. I'm just like, yo, I think this is it right here. I think this is it. And yeah, the rest is history.
It's such a key lesson in terms of understanding that, like, first drafts often suck. And yeah, like the power is in the editing. Like, the power, like, there's something necessary in getting good or bad out on the page, like sound wise, whatever, and then reshaping it. And that's really where our skill and our ability and our, like, personality comes from. Is it the draft, but from what we do with it?
Yo, absolutely. And like getting out of your own way is the most important thing. Cause I don't know how many times I've like, I'm working on a project, I need one more song and I need it to be like this because this is the role it has to play. But then I have these other ideas in my head, like, oh man, I want to do this, I want to do that. But I'm like keeping myself from exploring those things because I want to do this one thing. But every time I'm like, all right, let me just address what is actually just right here in front of me, even though I don't think it's going to work. I get it out, and sometimes it just ends up working, and sometimes it was, I need to just clear the way.
Yeah.
So now I can work on this other thing without, you know, this thing kind of holding me back or distracting me. Another thing I learned from No ID, we were working on beats, and he's like, yeah, I've been developing this drum process. And he's like, you know, I haven't figured it out yet, but we'll see. And so he's, you know, he's kind of just cycling through drums and stuff. And honestly, I'm like, these drums are not good. But I'm not gonna sit here and be like, yo, no idea, those drums are trash. I'm just like, you know, like, they're fine, whatever. And then I'm playing beats for him, and he goes, oh, yo, I figured it out. Goes to his laptop, he hits a couple buttons, plays those same beats back, and all the drums are crazy. And I'm like, what did you just do? And he's like, oh no, this isn't your stuff. My drums were just too, I needed to simplify them a little bit. Took off this one thing, make the loop a little bit shorter. Boom, is what it needed. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, he didn't allow the fact that he didn't like the drums where they were at to keep him from, like, just being okay with just sitting in that, you know? Because he didn't, like he didn't care. He was just, it's just on my laptop. If it's, you know, like, it's, if it's bad, it's going to stay on my laptop. If it's good, it's going to get sent somewhere. Someone's going to be on it. And just being comfortable in the process of getting where you want to go and not panicking when, oh my gosh, this song is trash, this line is trash, oh, that didn't work out the way I wanted to. Just, we're just not at the finish line yet. We're not there yet.
How has that felt with getting Spectrum to the finish line? Has that been a kind of a huge influence, a huge change in perspective from where it was 3 years ago to where it's at now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, like, when I first started Spectrum, it was solely just to, like, get ideas out without having to make them necessarily fit together. I was just like, the original idea was, I'm going to put out a song every week, and whatever color it happens to sound like, I'm just going to attach that title to it. And then the first two came out, and then I realized I'm gonna need more time than a week to do these songs the way I really want to, you know? Yeah. And then it'd be a month between songs. And then that's when I kind of got discovered throughout that process. And then I'm like, all right, cool. We're putting a wrap on it, you know, until I get where I'm where I want to be. and then I'm going to put out the project. And then just the project kind of evolving over time, I finally had a concept for the whole project, and then realizing, okay, these are the emotions that represent this period of my life, and this is how I want to present them. But just literally be okay with scrapping whole songs if it's really dope, but doesn't fit what I'm trying to do. And like really, you know, ID helped me be comfortable with that. You know, like if you're scrapping like dope songs from your project's probably gonna turn out pretty dope. You know?
Right.
But yeah, so now I was actually talking to Zoot of our Pigeons and Playing Saber about it. And he summed up like the summer, like the project so beautifully. And he said, it's like Inside Out for adults.
Yeah.
Every song is like about feeling an emotion and not being afraid to like fully embrace that, you know? So if I'm angry, I'm not gonna, I'm not gonna be angry. Like, I'm just gonna be angry right now, feel it, and then let it pass through. And that's kind of been the exercise of Spectrum, is me really getting to know my emotions a bit more and being okay and knowing like, yo, this is literally just a part of being a human. And some days I'm going to be depressed. Some days I'm going to be happy. Some days I'm going to be hopeful. Some days I'm going to be doubtful. But if I can like improve my relationship with them and know, okay, I feel like this, I'm going to sit in this for a second, let it pass through, and know it's not going to be forever. You know, I might just need to sleep on it and then I'm gonna be fine, or might not. But all that to say, when you describe it as Inside Out for adults, I'm like, that's perfect. That's exactly what it is.
It's a really good way to conceptualize it. And just talking about like the emotion of that moment, I feel like that's a really cool thing to be able to explore as an artist. I feel like when I was talking with Harry Adokwa, where you know, yeah, we met at Fire on the Mountain party, like that was something he talked about too, is being able to really like channel those emotions that he was feeling and like the honest ones that he was feeling into that album. And I think probably the standout thing about that album is just how emotional some of those songs really gets and allow him to be.
Absolutely. I love that project. He killed that.
Yeah. When can people expect more about Spectrum?
So we're putting out a song every 2 weeks, so the whole thing's out. So nice. First song just came out today. Whatever 2 weeks from this Friday, the 5th is, that's when the next one's coming out, and that's the trend we're following. Yeah.
Nice. And how many tracks?
It goes through Roy G. Biv.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. All right, so that's good. We're going to have music throughout, like, most of the rest of the year then for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, no, a couple months, a few months.
Into the summer.
Yeah. Perfect. I'm excited, man. Looking forward to it. And I guess this brings us to your last call. So you get uninterrupted period to talk about anything that you want for however long you want. Okay. So this is your time.
Man, I have one quick thing. It's not going to be super crazy, but when I look at where art is today and how people are critiquing art and looking at art and like, oh man, like our best music is all behind us and everyone here is like, they're cool, but they're not such and such. That's BS, yo. Like if it's true that we have all the best art behind us, that means we have all the best references to pull from. So like, I'm supposed to have a better discography than Kanye West. That's what's supposed to happen. If the best is behind us, what are we doing? Like, that's depressing, you know? Like, there's got to be people who are at least willing to, like, step out and be like, yo, I'm better than everything else that was before us. And we should be striving to do that. And then on the other end, people need to be ready for that and be responsive to that and be okay with that. If things aren't moving forward, we're moving backwards at the end of the day. But that's what I feel like I'm here to do. Make an impact, make dope art, make dope music, make dope clothes, movies, all the things that are on my heart, man. And I'm thankful to God for everything that he's put in my life and the positions he's put me in, that I can actually start to step into that that role. That's it.
And they ask me, they ask me, they ask me, I tell them. Raise your glasses, your glasses, your glasses to the sky. This is the last call for alcohol.